Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. In 2010, Kalief Browder was locked up at Rikers Island in New York. He was only 16 years old. He was never convicted of a crime. He hadn't yet had a trial. But he spent 3 years at Rikers, suffering abuse at the hands of inmates, guards. He also spent 2 years in solitary confinement. The reason he was there? His family was too poor to afford bail.
Well, my family tried to get me a public, tried to get me a lawyer, but my family was they was going through some hard times at the time, so they couldn't post bail or either get me a lawyer.
Well, Browder was eventually released, but he took his own life in 2015. He was just 22 years old. Georgetown Law professor Peter Edelman says Kalief Browder's life and death is just one of the many stories that show how the criminal justice system is radically tilted against poor Americans. He writes about this in his new book called Not a Crime to Be Poor, The Criminalization of Poverty in America. And Professor Edelman joins me now in the studio. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you very much. I'm so glad to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you. Now, I think many of our listeners might know about your long and storied career being an advocate for poor Americans, including your work with Robert Kennedy, for example. But what is it that triggered your attention and focus specifically on how smaller aspects of the criminal justice system lead to such, terrible outcomes like Kalief Browder had?
One word for me, Ferguson. Mm-hmm. Now, when you talk about Kalief Browder, this is something that people knew about. People knew and know about how terrible Rikers is.
Yeah.
So the entry point for me in writing this book was not that. You inevitably get to Kalief Browder and the bail and how it is that the mental health places are the jails, not what we thought we were doing decades ago. But for me, it was finding out that not just Michael Brown, but the fact that they were in that small city were arresting their own people over and over again and squeezing them to get the money to run their city, and then to discover that that's a national fact.
Yeah. So there was the Justice Department's at least one of those studies coming out of post-Ferguson.
Fabulous report. Yeah. Yes, that was part of my learning.
So let's talk about in a little bit more detail then. I mean, when you say that in America, it has essentially become a crime to be poor, or it feels like that. I mean, what are some of the specific reasons for or ways in which we're seeing that?
Well, two categories here in the book. One is the fines and fees and how that has turned into this way of getting income to run the state or the city or the court system. And what happens, it really entraps people by the millions. And it's major, actually, in terms of the majority of it, is taking away people's driver's licenses that we have all over the country, 4 million people in California alone. But the other piece is it turns out that it's metastasized, and we're talking about kids who get sent to jail, to court, for something in the old days before would have been something at the principal's office.
And right.
So other things besides the fines and fees.
Well, but on the fines and fees, for example, I just want to focus on that for a moment.
Yes.
Because, I mean, as you write about, and others have as well, we're seeing all sorts of small fines and fees now for failure to showing up for a certain court date or failure to do X or Y, which can pile up on individual poor Americans. But the reason why cities and towns have levied so much, what is the reason for that? I mean, obviously, the money is being used for something.
Yes.
Why?
Well, the reason why is the anti-tax rebellion. People all over the country, those units of government all over the country found that they were falling short because they didn't have the tax revenue. And in a rather cruel decision, they decided really all over the country to get the money out of their own citizens. And so that's why we have it. And it has been done in a way that is particularly hard on low-income people, and they're everywhere. They're disparately African-American and in other parts of the country, Latino.
I mean, is it going too far to say that we, in certain places, we have reached a system where poor Americans are being squeezed in order to subsidize a criminal justice system that they themselves are being cycled through?
Yes, and it's happening here in Massachusetts and has been for some time, having to have fees to be on probation, having to have fees to have a public defender, things you wouldn't think were going on here. There's good work going on right now among the leaders of both of the courts and in the legislature, and mm-hmm. so the Commonwealth is moving in the right direction.
Well, since you brought up Massachusetts, I've got some numbers here that might help us sort of understand mm-hmm. what's happening here in this state. For example, about bail reform, mm-hmm. We had an SJC case that said that bail shouldn't be set beyond a person's ability to pay for it.
Yes.
And to put that in some context here, I was seeing some numbers from a study that said that more than 5,000 people every day in Massachusetts face pretrial incarceration. So it's not an insignificant number. And you see some major disparities. There was a 2014 study that said in Middlesex County, for example, on October 31st, 2014, 22% of people in jail in Middlesex County on that day were there because they couldn't post $1,000
yes,
in bail.
Yes, and nationally, you have 700,000 people who were in jail on any given day, and 3/5 of those people are not yet, they have not been tried. And that's about bail that they can't pay. And the reason for that is the system doesn't have the capacity to have the trials. And so what they do is they use bail to squeeze people to come and plead guilty, which in turn, for something they didn't do, in turn gets them into owing a lot of money. So it's a tool for that. And then once they're hooked, when they can't pay, it just goes on and on because added debts get piling up.
Well, again, just for context here, because some of the numbers are quite shocking. Mass Inc. did a study and they found out in 2015 in Barnstable County, the median bail amount for a white person was $5,000. The median bail amount for a black person in Barnstable County was $20,000. So talk about the disparity.
Yes, well, absolutely. All the way through all of these things, there's a racial disparity, and that's part of the story. It's a story of race and poverty, poverty and race, a very dangerous intersection.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so you mentioned some reform efforts here in Massachusetts. There, in the criminal justice reform bills, since we're talking about bail, I just might mention that advocates are really trying to move bail from a cash-based system, like we've been talking mm-hmm. about, to one that's more evidence-based in terms
right.
of dangerousness.
That's right. And we have two things that are going on around the country. One is there are lawsuits that are beginning to be successful. The biggest one in Houston, Harris County in Texas, where the federal judge has declared that the system down there is unconstitutional because of the rich-poor difference. So that's coming along around the country. There are a number of these cases. But the second is that states, Kentucky, D.C. has been doing it basically right for 40 years. So it was always out there. And Connecticut, Kentucky had done it. But now we have this system that the Arnold Foundation has supported, which creates a way very carefully researched. This is the right way to do it, is to have statewide statutory change so that we really don't, it's much harder to fall back into the bad ways of doing it.
So let's presume for a moment that some of these reforms work. Where does that leave the same towns and their court systems that are so reliant on the income that's produced from charging fees for and posting high bails for all these poor people?
It's a problem. The answer is they're going to have to figure it out because this is not something that's acceptable.
Right.
But they got into it in the first place. People who, in at least in some places, are sort of well-meaning, and they fell into it, and then it's an addiction. So people have known for years here in Massachusetts that this was a problem, and people like Chief Justice Ralph Gantz would go to the legislature to ask them to change over a period of time and couldn't get anywhere because they kept on saying, we need the money. This is really bad.
Mm. And I suppose finding other means of supporting the court system is also something that would help solve the problem, right? That should states be returning money to these criminal local criminal justice systems?
Well, they just need to figure out, and it can be done, to do it the way it was traditionally, which is it's public responsibility to run our court system. Well, now it isn't just what we've said so far, but there's for-profit stuff all over the country, which is another terrible thing and also really it ruins the system.
Yeah. You know, I'm thinking about how deep and pervasive this problem is because there's all sorts of ways in which justice is denied. I mean, I've had several conversations with former SJC Chief Justice Margaret Marshall, and, you know, she talked for years about how justice delayed is justice denied.
Yes.
And the backlog of cases all across the state.
Yes.
Is tremendous. But, you know, we're just scratching the surface here, Professor Edelman, of what you have in your book, and I really encourage people to read it to get a deeper understanding of things. But in the last couple of minutes that we have, since you are such a resource and your advocacy and scholarship on these issues is so deep, I'm just wondering, you know, in the many decades that you have been trying to fight poverty and trying to understand poverty in America, has the challenge become, do you think it's easier to solve or more insidious now than it was, say, in the 60s when you were working with Robert Kennedy?
Well, you know, one thing that is kind of people don't understand, that over the course of the last almost 50 years, the problem in terms of poverty is made worse by what's happened to the structure of our economy and all the terrible jobs that we have now compared to the good jobs in the manufacturing sector. The fact is that with the public policy that we have, if we didn't have those things, Social Security, earned income tax credit, food stamps, and so on, we would have twice as many people poor in poverty as we have right now. Something like close to 90 million people as opposed to the 43 million that we have. So, in fact, our public policy, people say, some people, certainly I don't like Paul Ryan and such like that, saying that nothing works. It does work. The context makes it hard, the economic concept. And it's also true, however, that race is still a factor in our politics. The changes in distribution, the inequality, these are problems. So we have serious challenges.
Got a ways to go, for sure. Well, Peter Edelman is a law professor at Georgetown University. His new book, It Is Not a Crime to Be Poor. It's a really terrific read. I encourage you all to do that. You can see him speaking at Porter Square Books tonight. We have more information about that at radioboston.org. Professor Edelman, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
That's it for today. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.